This is an ABC podcast.
Oh no, I see a spider web is tangled up with me, and I lost my head. The thought of all the stupid things I'd said, singing out, I never meant to cause you trouble.
Adam Liddell, who wowed the judges, coming second in the Voice Australia TV singing competition in 2016. You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. What's extraordinary about Adam's slick performance is that offstage, when he's not singing, he's afflicted with the tics that come with Tourette's syndrome. Here's a recording he made of himself whilst in class at school in 2015. And a warning that this program contains strong language, which is involuntary for some people with Tourette's.
Fuck off. Oh my God. Hey. Fucking hell. Fucking hell. Yeah.
Sorry.
Saying like what? Sorry, I didn't hear. Yeah.
Adam Liddell from his YouTube channel Tic Twitch Teen. Tourette's syndrome was named after a French neurologist, Jean-Gilles de la Tourette, who published a description of 9 patients with the condition in 1885. Professor Valsama Epen, Chair of Infant, Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at the University of New South Wales, defines the condition.
Tourette syndrome is characterised by muscle twitches, several of them. It could be a blinking, a nose twitch, or a shoulder shrug, or a leg jerk, a body movement. So any of those in multiple. And also at least one involuntary noise, which we call the vocal tic or the phonic tic. Examples would be a throat clear, a grunt, or a hiccup, a shriek, scream. And in severe cases, it could be involuntarily uttering various obscenities or inappropriate statements.
Tourette's is a neurodevelopmental disorder with a genetic component. Though onset varies, it usually starts appearing at the age of 6 or 7 and often changes, for the better or the worse, during adolescence. The most severe forms can be quite debilitating.
An extreme case would be where there is very severe tics, so much so that they can't walk, they can't function, because the whole body is thrust into various movements, and also very severe self-injurious behaviours. And that would be really difficult for them to function then with the daily life, and then people who would struggle to even write something or just use their hands for various things that you need to do to get on with life. So those are the very severe forms where the whole tics movements are so extreme that they can't function.
Valsa Epen. Adam Liddell's symptoms are less severe now than they were a couple of years ago. His Tourette's flared up in his early teenage years.
So it started when I was 14 with, you know, head movements and jerking and arm jerking. Then over the next couple of months, it kind of progressed towards the more swearing and all that, which is a rare symptom, but I did get it.
I can hear at the moment there are some sounds.
Yeah. Some noises and stuff. So it kind of goes up and down all the time. So you get tics, and then some of them, well, the tics are what we call the symptoms. They come and they go. So, I mean, right now I don't have it very bad. I'm not swearing or anything. But I have small tics, like, you know, I've got this one where I sniff through my nose. I've got that one where I exhale. But yeah, when I was younger, my head jerking, my head used to just rock from side to side and I'd throw it around. It was pretty painful. As well as, you know, the arm jerking, throwing my arms out, that was painful as well. So it was all quite drastic.
So the tics actually hurt in some way, in some physical way?
They can. I mean, even the vocal ones can as well. I mean, it depends on which tic. If you've got a blinking tic or something, it's most likely not going to hurt. But if you have one where you're throwing your arms around or, you know, clearing your throat constantly, it does definitely wear you down.
Valsa Epen from the University of New South Wales explains the parts of the brain involved in Tourette's syndrome.
We have some indications to confirm that a certain circuitry of the brain is involved. So that's the basal ganglia type of area, which is important for our movements. And then you have got that frontal lobe area, which is important for our judgment call. Should I move? How much should I move? Is there a purpose for the movement? So when the two are working in sync, then you have got purposeful movements within our will and volition and control. But when the involuntary movements almost get released from that subcortical basal ganglia area where it arises without all that cortical input to it, that's where the involuntary tics come about. So we think that there are other circuitry areas also that come into the picture then. For example, the frontal lobe and the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex is important for your attention, your, you know, ADHD is a condition where the impulsivity, hyperactivity and inappropriate behaviours could become part of that. So frontostriatal, pallidothalamocortical circuitry we talk about, which is a whole area of different areas of the brain that come together as a circuitry to make things happen.
When the physical and the verbal tics occur, what determines the type of tic? For example, in verbal tics, why are particular words used over other words? And many people are aware that sometimes they're swear words. Why do the particular words or tics happen?
People think of it in two different ways. One is that you may have something that is in the unconscious mind, which you kind of, without processing, it would look like a really odd and bad, which we don't even get to be aware of because our conscious processes are such in control that those things we don't even get to realize. But whatever it is, those random things that go on in that unconscious processing, if it just came out, you wouldn't have a clue what even that would look like. But also there's another phenomenon called echo phenomenon, which is that when you hear something or you see something, then you mimic or you have to do that. So a bit of it may be that you have seen something or some trigger happens. It may not be direct trigger even, but it's a very complex way in which the brain then processes all those things and spits out something totally different sometimes. It's very hard to say why and how these things really happen.
Could some of the type of tics be related to something that's happened in the past for people? Can it be related to perhaps what experiences the child's been through?
I don't think it has got a direct relationship in terms of the type of tic, but anybody who is under stress or has had difficulties in life would definitely have an exacerbation of tics. So when you are under stress, it's known that tics get worse. So it may be that those kind of circumstances may have an additive effect or a compounding effect on the tic so that it becomes more prominent or becomes severe in a particular point in time, but not as necessarily to the type of tic.
Valsa Epen. Tourette's syndrome often occurs alongside other psychiatric disorders, most commonly obsessive compulsive disorder and ADHD. Adam Liddell has both these conditions, as well as anxiety and depression. And the stress caused by other people's reactions to his behaviour can make things worse. Adam remembers this from his school days.
Oh, fucking hell.
I mean, I think when I was swearing and stuff and all those kind of really crazy tics, the worst part was the ride to school, because I used to catch the train for an hour every day to school. There were always different people on the train, you know, some of them would make fun of you. I mean, there were even like, you know, 56-year-old men that were on the train the one time that were mimicking what I was doing and having a laugh to themselves. So, I mean, it's not even just the teenagers that can be mean. It can be, you know, the ones that you expect to be respectful and to be knowledgeable. They can be the ones that are mean as well. But at school, I mean, it was fairly okay. In the beginning, it was a bit tough for everyone to kind of get used to. But eventually, it kind of just faded in the background. I mean, the teachers would get annoyed sometimes because I would yell out something that the classmates did find funny. And I mean, I admit it was funny, some of the stuff I said. So they would laugh and kind of get distracted. But I never went to a special school of sorts because, you know, I've always been academically capable of higher subjects. So there was no real reason for me to kind of drop out of the school that I loved going to and, you know, just so that the teachers would have an easier time.
And so when people would mimic you or laugh at you, what effect would that have on you?
When we're aware of our tics, it brings them on a lot more. So, you know, if I'm thinking about my Tourette's, I'll be ticking a lot more than if I was just sitting in my bed, you know, watching a YouTube video. We always see these examples, and it's absolutely terrible because a bully will, you know, mimic someone with Tourette's and make them feel bad about their Tourette's. And along with that, the person that actually has the Tourette's is going to be ticking more. So it's just fueling the anxiety for the person with it. So it's definitely not a good idea to kind of bring awareness to someone who has Tourette's. I mean, I've had a lot of examples where I'll have a good day where I'm not ticking much and it's pretty great. And then someone says, oh, Adam, you haven't been ticking that much today. And bam, all of a sudden the Tourette's come on and I'm, you know, spasming everywhere. So it's it's quite annoying. I mean, the one thing that a lot of people with Tourette's do struggle with is depression because of the way that we're treated. And I definitely have depression myself. I mean, it's a lot better now with medication and also just, you know, a lot less stress in my life. But that definitely did play. I had a panic attack once on the train just because I was so stressed and so self-conscious about myself that everyone watching me, it was peak hour and I just couldn't handle it anymore. So I got off the train and, you know, as panic attacks go, can't control it. I just broke down crying, called up my parents because I just couldn't take it anymore. It spirals into something pretty ugly.
So do you have a premonition or an awareness that a tic is about to happen?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, you can feel what's coming. So, you know, with the physical ones, it's different for everyone, but if I have, for example, a neck tic or something, I'll feel some kind of pressure build up on my neck until eventually I have to release it. Like I'm busy ticking now because I'm talking about it. My neck's going off. Then also with the vocal ones, you can feel it coming on. So this like exhale one that I do, I can feel it build up in my stomach until I eventually have to do it. And then also with the more complex ones, like the swearing and yelling out words and stuff, it's different for everyone. But for myself, I know exactly what's going to come out before I say it. So it's kind of that added stress beforehand that I know I'm about to shout. You know, if I'm at an airport, I can feel myself about to yell out the word bomb. And then all of a sudden I do. And it's it's not good.
If you have that premonition, is there something you can do to stop it happening?
So you can hold it in for a certain amount of time. Everyone has a different kind of ability to hold it in, but it's definitely going to come out eventually, whether that's you can hold it in for 10 seconds or you can hold it in for 10 hours. It depends. But the thing is, if you do hold it in, it'll be worse when it eventually comes out. So I generally tend to not hold it in. Otherwise, it can just escalate.
Adam Liddell. You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Today, living with Tourette syndrome. It's a neurodevelopmental spectrum disorder causing repeated involuntary movements and uncontrollable sounds, symptoms which are known as tics. Robin Latimer is now the president of the Tourette Syndrome Association. Both her children have Tourette's. Her son was the first to be diagnosed.
He was five and he had a number of behaviours that I felt were a little bit, couldn't explain them essentially, where it was a bit like ADHD type behaviours, obsessive compulsive type behaviours. And then overnight, literally, his head started nodding quite forcefully in certain movements that I thought he was having a seizure. And on closer observation of him, he didn't seem to be aware or have insight that he was doing that, and it didn't cause him distress at the time. But that was the point at which I knew it was neurological, so sought more answers. My daughter is almost 3 years younger, and she started having little vocal tics at the very young age of four, just little things like breathing tics of type things, little noises and some particular eye tics and mouth moving tics and things that I think if I didn't have the knowledge about my son, I wouldn't have picked up, but I'd become very sensitive to the observation. And that's what Tourette's is. It's clinical observation in terms of a diagnosis. It's not go and have a blood test or a brain scan. She also had traits of obsessive compulsive type of behaviour, but instead of the ADHD, more anxiety type issues that went side by side with it.
Robin Latimer explains that Tourette's is on a spectrum, and the more severe cases can be totally debilitating and isolating.
But the majority of cases are the lower half of the spectrum. And the majority of the cases, it's not so much the tics or the symptoms of Tourette's that cause them distress once they accept that condition. It's more the acceptance of other people and how they fit in society that causes more stress. And particularly within employment situations or in school education settings where you are around other people, the vocal tics seem to be the hardest to manage, because if you've got motor tics, you could be doing something quietly somewhere else, but the vocal tics do extend into other people's space as such. But we've done an exercise in some schools where it's about accommodations. I say we often hear loud noises throughout our everyday life, but we accommodate psychologically because it's familiar to us, so we just accept it and don't react. You know, if you live on a train line, you get used to that sound of the train going past. So you can do experiments and turn it into a bit of a fun thing in school and have the kids create a database essentially of every sound they hear throughout the week, and then tally up how much of it was a chair moving or someone coughing and how many of those were actually the child's tics, and make a bit of a maths lesson out of it, and at the same time change a few perceptions about how much of an impact it really has when put into perspective of all the sounds we hear every day.
So it's difficult because often the vocal tics can be quite socially unacceptable. I think many people know Tourette's because they're swear words, they're rude words, they're words that have a lot of social unacceptability associated with them.
That's right. That's known as coprolalia, a tic where it can be profanities or swear words. But it's important also to realise that that's just one of the many types of vocal tics, and it's in probably less than 20% of people that have Tourette's might have that tic. And it doesn't mean they'll have that tic forever, because tics are changeable. They might literally have it for 2 weeks and it goes away. I think the really key issue here is to realise that it's not a choice, that those profanities are not behavioural or anger generated in any way, and they certainly don't represent the values or thoughts that the person's having. They're completely random to them. I liken it to we have acceptance of other things that in certain environments are considered taboo, such as nude paintings in an art gallery, yet we accept these nude bodies on a wall in an art gallery. So I try and bring in other examples where we've learned to have acceptance under certain environment or certain criteria. And the key word is acceptance of the fact that it's involuntary and not a choice.
What's the extent of bullying that takes place in relation to Tourette's?
The evidence of bullying is really anecdotal from the families within our membership that come to us for support, or schools often come to us as well for information on how best to manage Tourette's within the school setting. The thing with bullying and Tourette's is that it's important to note that Tourette's is suggestible. So if a child mimics another child's tics, the child with that tic has the urge to do it again. So there's this guaranteed reaction. So that's why it's so important to be onto it very early on, and for educators to be aware of that. And the second fact is that Tourette's is really changeable. So what was a tic last week might be something different this week. So again, there's a new thing to latch on to. Bullies tend to be really quite observant characters. And Tourette's being something that's really the elephant in the room, people know something's happening. It's quite often not a choice to hide it, like another condition might be. It really needs to be dealt with up front. And so we really advocate for people, when they're ready, to be open about their Tourette's, when the timing is right for them, to educate the person with Tourette's first and foremost, and then they can self-advocate and involve them in the education process of their peers and the education of the staff members at school. In our experience, the bully just wants a reason, and once they're given a reason, they're usually quite accepting. In many cases where I've done in services, I can tell who the bully was, because they're the one asking the most questions. And afterwards, quite often, they've come up and apologised. Mm. So they're quite interesting characters when you start looking into it. My son had a child that was annoying him a little bit when he was young, and he came home and told me about it, and I just said, we'll ask him over for a play date. And he thought I was crazy. And I said, well, you go and do it and see what happens. And he went and asked him for a play date and never heard from him again. So it was just, befriend, I guess, where you can, is what we found to be one of the best approaches. But education and knowledge is so powerful, particularly for the child with Tourette's.
Robin Latimer. Adam Liddell has become an ambassador for the Tourette Syndrome Association. He supports other kids with Tourette's and shares the tactics he uses to deal with people's reactions to him.
As I've gotten older, generally, you know, you always get the school bullies and stuff and the people in school that don't really know who you are. And that did affect my relationship with them, with the Tourette's. But I tried my hardest to, you know, stand up in front of all my classes, say, hey, this is, you know, I've got Tourette's, ask any questions you want. The best thing that I found was to be completely open with it, you know, just let people ask questions, answer them, kind of want to educate people about it. And then everyone seems to kind of enjoy it. And if I, you know, my tics were fairly funny, the stuff I would shout out. So I'd laugh with it and I'd say, you know what, if you want to laugh, don't feel like you can't, because I know some of the stuff I say is funny. So you don't have to feel bad and, you know, hold it in, because it just makes everyone more comfortable then.
Adam Liddell. Robin Latimer is particularly moved by one of the positive initiatives the Tourette Syndrome Association runs. Over the past several years, they've held a number of camps for kids with Tourette's.
Every year there's a particular child I see arrive with their, you know, head down, their body language is so defeated, really anxious. And after, you know, 24, 36 hours at the camp, they leave with their head high, wanting to come back or not wanting to leave, you know, and they come back again the next year and they're a completely changed child. So having that exposure to other people like them, feeling a sense of belonging and understanding and non-judgment is really, really powerful, because there's just a total understanding. It doesn't need to be said. You just know you're amongst other people that get it and the complexities involved, because there's a lot more to Tourette's than just what you see. And being amongst others that really do understand builds resilience and a sense of belonging, and we all need to feel like we belong to some tribe somewhere.
There's no cure for Tourette syndrome, but Valsa Epen outlines the various approaches to treatment.
The mainstay of treatment is medication, and that's pretty much in moderate to severe cases. Mild to moderate cases, there's also behavioural methods of treatment available called the Comprehensive Behavioural Intervention for tics. So the idea is that you have a premonitory urge to do a tic. It's almost like a big sneeze or something coming out, and you feel it coming somehow. Mm. Some people say it's at the site of the tic in the form of a stretch or a tension. Some people say it's in the head, your brain is melting, or that urge somehow builds up wherever it is, and then you have the tic and then it's relieved. So it's an urge tic relief cycle that gets consolidated. So if you can catch that urge and do the opposing muscle movement is the phenomenon by which the comprehensive behavioral intervention for tics works. So you break that kind of vicious cycle, if you like. And so strengthening that inhibitory pathways and saying you don't have to complete that premonitory sensation with a motor movement. And then you develop that control a bit more, not only behaviorally, but also at a neuroanatomical level where the inhibitory circuitry is strengthened so that it's not an automatic cycle of premonitory urge and it gets into a vicious cycle.
What about if it's a vocal tic?
Yeah, deep breathing and various kinds of vocal muscles of the opposing nature, in usually those kind of things would work. Even if it's an ah or something like a deep breath, which involves a little bit of a sound, but not necessarily the whole thing. So it's much more difficult to work with vocal tics than motor tics, but definitely those are the kind of things that people would work on. But mild cases, all you need is awareness, really, that what it is, so that people don't ask them to stop and make them more aware of it. And it's more about awareness, understanding, and those kind of things would be extremely important for everyone, but particularly for mild cases where you don't need to be actively intervening with a behavioral treatment or a medication.
I'm Adam Liddell. I have Tourette syndrome. Now, Tourette syndrome causes me to make involuntary movements and noises, and sometimes I swear and say random stuff. Wankers! Ha! Like that stuff. Like, but one time it doesn't happen is when I'm singing. So anyways, this is the most requested song on my channel. It is Death of the Bachelor by Panic at the Disco.
Do I look lonely? I see the shadows in my face. People have told me.
So let's talk about your singing. You've found that singing is actually a lovely free place for you to be without tics.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting. Basically, I've been singing ever since I was about 5 years old. And then when I got diagnosed with the hardcore Tourette's, I kind of, you know, realized straight away that singing takes it away. So that was definitely a great moment for me to find out that I kind of have a respite from it. You see it happens a lot in these cases with Tourette's. There's a lot of people that have these certain passions that kind of takes away their Tourette's temporarily.
Professor Valsa Epen explains why some people, like Adam, get respite from their tics by intensely focusing on something they're passionate about.
The circuitry could just hyper-focus on one element at the expense of everything else. When you're singing, or I know surgeons who don't have a tic when they are doing the surgery, but then, you know. And also, it's to be remembered that tics can be voluntarily suppressed for brief periods of time. Sometimes parents would say that in the school, there's hardly anything, they kind of put it on wraps. But the moment they are jump into the car to go back home, it's all released. And often that leads to a lot of misunderstanding that if they try harder, they can do it. But that's at the expense of mounting inattention. They are kind of really sitting on that urge. And many people would work around certain situations to just really, when it's important not to do it, they can really, with a lot of effort, do it. But in your everyday life, you can't do it all the time. And similarly, at a brain functional level, when you're hyper-focused with one circuitry and one pathway being used to the full, everything else kind of almost goes into a quiescent state of, you're not important, don't come in, you know, stay out of this. That's probably what's happening at a brain level. But even consciously, you can suppress voluntarily tics for brief periods of time. And that would vary depending on the severity to probably seconds, to minutes, to hours, to days.
The thought of all the stupid things I'd say.
So you made a decision to go on The Voice. Tell me about that.
That was a pretty crazy decision. I mean, I was sitting on the train one day and just all of a sudden saw an advert and I was like, yeah, why not apply? It's probably not going to be anything, but let's just try it. And I mean, from there to second place, it was a massive journey. I think the biggest thing for me was the amount of awareness it raised for Tourette's. A lot of people were sending emails and sending messages saying, you know, how they'd find it easier to speak about Tourette's now. And, you know, if someone says to someone, hey, I've got Tourette's, then people were like, oh, that's like, you know, Adam from The Voice and stuff. So, I mean, I'm really grateful that I had the opportunity to do that. You know, at first it was nerve-wracking getting on stage and performing in front of millions of people. But I've always enjoyed performing. I've always kind of been a natural performer. So I was having the absolute time of my life, being on stage, living out my dream. It was absolutely epic.
For me.
One thing that I'd always say in terms of raising awareness with Tourette's is, you know, just because we make these noises and movements doesn't mean we're any different to you. We're still intellectually capable of doing school, we're still, you know, socially capable of handling a conversation. So if someone you know has Tourette's, don't just push them to a corner and forget about them. Try and speak to them and learn about, you know, their life.
Adam Liddell, whose two YouTube channels, Tick Twitch Teen and Adam Liddell Sings, are still growing in popularity. Check them out. Find these links and more information about Tourette's on the All in the Mind site. Thanks to producer Diane Dean and sound engineer Wayne Nguyen. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Bye till next time.